Here we are at Jimmy's on First. There's the music. For our friend, the general manager of the Seattle Mariners, Justin Hollander, walking over here and joining us. How you doing, man?
Is this actually my music, or is it just music?
This is, you know, it's very dramatic music, you know. But only general managers and higher get music like this when you come on the air.
I'm honored.
Yeah. Very good. Well, you know, let's just start with the brass tacks. Let's just start with injuries, because I know that was a nasty sound coming off the wrist of Ty France yesterday. So tell us where he is after getting hit by that pitch.
Yeah, he got smoked pretty good. I was scared. Usually Ty doesn't stay down for very long. He'll let out a yell and then walk to first base, and he stayed down for a while last night. Thankfully, he appears to be okay. He's available in an emergency tonight. I wouldn't expect him to get in there tonight, okay. But he felt better than expected today, and hopefully he'll be back in the lineup tomorrow.
Good. And then the guys that were looking forward to coming back. I know Dylan Moore has just kind of been – it's been a limbo situation, kind of been a limbo situation for Munoz as well. So where are we there?
So Demo is in the lineup tonight for Tacoma.
Okay.
He's working through his rehab assignment. You know, hopefully sometime this homestand, he's ready to get activated. I said earlier this week, one of the things that's a challenge with Dylan, as you said, it's just been kind of a in-and-out situation. He hasn't really had a spring training. He didn't play in spring training at all. He had a very short buildup, and then it shut down again on the last rehab assignment. So we want to give him the amount of time.
Sure.
Not concerned about his body as much as his timing, his rhythm. He hasn't had a lot of at-bats since last October, basically.
Yeah.
So do expect that he'll be active sometime on this homestand. When that is, I really can't say. It really depends on when he starts feeling like he has his rhythm and timing.
Justin Hollander with us, general manager of the Mariners. And Justin, help me out, because if I've got questions, I'm sure some of our listeners and our fans have as well. Jerry DePoto, he gets elevated from general manager to team president. You take his spot. So I'm envisioning some type of triumvirate in the decision process with you and Scott Servais and DePoto. How does that break down in terms of, like, some of the day-to-day decisions, like, within the club, who plays, what about talent acquisition? Just if you can kind of give us a window into how the duties are now dispersed between you three.
Sure, great question. I would say day-to-day lineup decisions, batting order, pitching decisions, how we line up in the bullpen, that's primarily Scott. You know, he'll ask for my input occasionally. If we're dealing with a tricky situation, or, you know, he's struggling to come to the right answer, he'll hit Jerry or me or both of us on what our thoughts are. Same thing with the bullpen day to day. You know, we have a call every day. Scott and our pitching coaches run that call, you know, again, ask for input from the broader group. So that more falls coaching staff wise on the day to day makeup of the team. In terms of personnel decisions, that will fall on Jerry, myself, our front office team, both analytics and scouting groups. They'll all weigh in on potential acquisitions via trade, free agency, waiver claims, things like that. Really, my job is to be a good listener. It's to listen to the needs of Scott at the major league coaching and staff level. It's to listen to our analytics department and our scouting group and try and synthesize those opinions to make a recommendation to Jerry on sort of here's where the crowd source is for the group. And then Jerry and I will sit together with ownership, make recommendations on potential acquisitions, and then we go from there.
What's a sticky situation? Give us an example. You mentioned Scott might call you for a sticky situation. What would be like an example?
Scott, this isn't a secret. When Julio was in a bad rut earlier, we walked downstairs after we won a game, and he just said, hey, what do you think about dropping Julio down in the order a little bit, just giving him some room to breathe? I don't want to overreact. I'm watching it every night. I feel like he's just putting too much pressure on ourselves. What do you think? You know, those sort of things he'll generally ask about. If it's, you know, a core player who's hitting a spot for a long time, what's your thought on moving him to a certain place? And sometimes we agree and sometimes we disagree. Ultimately, it's Scott's decision, though. That's his job, is to have his finger on the pulse of the team every day.
Let's stay there with Julio, because, you know, those of us Mariner fans who've got a few years, we know how to embrace a record-setting, you know, transcendent type of center fielder, because we had one with Griffey. And, of course, we were expecting, okay, Julio, he's going to all of a sudden, you know, he's going to be that in year two. Well, that's been put on ice for at least a few weeks on that. Just give us a thought on how you handle that internally, all these expectations, the huge contract, the national acclaim and what have you. And he's not having a poor season, but he's not having quite the season that we all expected. What do you guys do internally?
I think you just trust in Julio's preparation. You are there for him when he has questions, when he needs you. And you also leave him alone and don't try and tinker every day. You know, there's always going to be periods of time when someone's going good or bad. They just sort of get amplified when it's the first part of the season and there's no foundation to build off on. So it hasn't been the best 2 months that Julio's ever had. It also hasn't been horrible. He's just fighting himself a little bit. He's hit into some bad luck. You can see he's been frustrated with, you know, some of the big moments where he's hit a ball right at somebody. Or he's swung at a pitch out of the zone. He put a lot on himself to carry the team. And when the offense wasn't going well in a number of places, I think he put more on himself. Like, I have to do more instead of just relaxing, breathing, trusting his talent. I think we're starting to see him come out of it. You know, he's made a couple mechanical changes over the last week to 10 days. The pitch selection has improved vastly in the month of May. He's tightening his zone instead of broadening it. I think the biggest thing we can do is be consistent day to day. You know, focus on swinging at the right pitches. Focus on the best version of your swing. If he does that, he's going to be great over time.
Meanwhile, you've got another outfielder that did his share of pressing in the past, and now he's got an over 800 OPS. I mean, what has been your emotions watching the 2023 version of Jared Kelenic?
I'm thrilled for him. You know, I think with all the things that came with Jared, all the hype, everything else that came when he came to the big leagues, when we brought him to the big leagues, the one thing that people forgot about is what a hard worker he is, the amount of time and energy and effort that he puts into making himself the best version that he can be of Jared Kelenic. All the comparisons, all the expectations that people have, no one has higher expectations, no one has a higher belief in what he should be than Jared does, and to have it not go perfectly right away, I think it was hard on him. I'm so happy for him that he took a step back this winter, believed in, or created a process that he believed in, created a swing that he was comfortable with, and just stuck to a process. And the couple times this year where he's veered off, he has self-identified, I got away from my approach on that one, I'm going to get back. And he's gotten back so quickly, and that's why we've seen, you know, he was unbelievable in April, and in May he's running like a 130 WRC plus again. He's just doing it every night. He's focused on every pitch. He's delivering in big moments. He's hitting lefties. He's hitting righties. He's been a plus defender in the corners. He's a great base runner. It's so fun to watch, and it's a great lesson in patience and discipline, both on his part and on our part.
Mariners GM Justin Hollander with us. Justin, let's put a spotlight on second base. I think for fans, maybe expecting a little bit more from Colton Wong, but the flip side to that is Jose Caballero has been probably more than anybody expected. Maybe a third person that you have in mind. Just kind of what's the thought internally about where you are at second base right now and for the remainder of the season?
You know, the remainder of the season, it's too soon to tell. You know, things change so fast week to week, month to month. Cavi's been unbelievable. He's done everything you could possibly want. His, you know, swing decisions are awesome. He's hit a couple homers. He's been incredible on the bases. He's played really well defensively, both at second and in the other spots on the infield when we've asked him to do it. Certainly, he's earned the right to play more. Colton has had a tough start. I think he's acknowledged that. Scott's talked about it. We've all talked about it. It hasn't been what we've hoped. That being said, he's a long track record of being a good player in the big leagues. We are going to find ways to give Colton opportunities to earn more playing time in the role we talked about, which is, you know, a versus right-handed pitching component of our team, and also acknowledge that Cavi's earned the right to play more than just against lefties. It'll be a balance. We'll figure it out along the way. There isn't going to be a set playbook. You know, Colton is going to play against all the righties, or Cavi's only going to play against the lefties. Cavi's earned the right for more time. Hopefully Colton his game comes back to the place it's been for a number of years, and he earns the right for more time. So we'll just take it week by week, day by day. But for now, I think you'll see a fair mix of both, including Cavi against some right-handed pitching.
Tell us more about the Caballero story, because if you're not a Mariner fan that doesn't follow the minors, right? Yeah. Okay, you've heard of Julio before he comes up. You've heard of Kelenic before he comes up. But a lot of these guys you've never heard of. And so they're all kind of, in the minds of the Mariner fan, they're all kind of the same dude, right? Yep. They're a Triple-A call-up. What did you know about Caballero, and why did you think that he was ready for Major League Baseball? Because clearly he is.
It's a really interesting story, obviously. Cavi was the return for Mike Leake, the Mike Leake trade that was done.
Mike
about,
Leake, wow, there's a blast from the past.
We got that trade done about 20 seconds before the trade deadline. There's video of me floating around somewhere in our conference room screaming, we got to go, we got to go, we're going to run out of time. Jerry was on the phone with Mike Hazen of the Diamondbacks right before the deadline. They had just traded Zach Greinke to the Astros. They'd acquired other players. They were looking for a veteran starter to backfill. We were negotiating player return and cash considerations, all with like a minute left to go with the trade deadline. So I had an email typed up to the league, basically ready to hit send if they agreed. We agreed with about 20 seconds left. I hit send. They replied, we agree, and we acquired Cabby.
Ooh.
Right about that time, I believe Cabby broke his hand. He's had a knee injury in between. But all along the way, every time he's gotten a chance to get in there, he's always made good swing decisions. He's always been an excellent base runner. He's been an excellent defender. And this winter, we got asked about Cabby by a number of teams in small transactions. And consistently, we just said, we'd rather hang on to Cabby. We want to see what it is. It's really hard to find middle infielders with that skill set that are just available to you as potential call-up options, depth, knowing he had a skill set that could translate well in the big leagues. Did I think he was going to put up a win in 30 games of play this year so far? No, I would be totally lying. But he's been a player in our system who has stood out for his ability to sort of be a master of all the little things. And he really does exemplify our dominate the zone approach. So I'm thrilled for him. He's worked really hard to get here and overcome a number of setbacks injury-wise.
Dick just referenced the thoughts of the kind of rank-and-file Mariner fan, and if I may be so bold, my sense is, if I could sum it up in 5 or so seconds, what the feeling about the Mariners is like, okay, unbelievable pitching staff, deep bullpen and what have you, offense coming along, but maybe needs another bat. And maybe if there was the Mariner fans collectively, if there was a disappointment, okay, you didn't get enough of a bat, and now you're seeing the DHs, a number of these guys below the Mendoza line, and some of the fans thought, well, this was somewhat predictable. Is that a fair thought, if I'm right on that fans may have had? And now that we played close to 50 games, what's your update about how you feel about the bats in the lineup?
I've been frustrated like everybody else. I'm not immune to that. Probably less immune than anybody watching a pitch-to-pitch night tonight and knowing what our projection systems had on the individual players, our systems had as a team outlook, and knowing that in a number of spots for a number of players, they've just underachieved either career norms or what the expectation was for the first part of the season or for the season in aggregate, and looking in short samples and seeing, wow, we have a lot of guys with a 650 OPS or under right now. Do I think that will continue? No, I think we'll be better than we have been. We need to be. We've been really inconsistent. I think in the month of May, we're something like a 105 WRC plus as a team, but it's come in fits and bursts. It hasn't been pitch to pitch, inning to inning, game to game. It's been a big inning here, a big inning there, a really consistent performance over 8 or 9 innings one game, and then it's been a frustrating performance the next 2 or 3 days. We need to be more consistent offensively. We need to make it harder on the opponent day to day than we have. Our team deserves that. Our fans deserve that. And honestly, our pitching staff deserves that. They've been phenomenal, and we have not played up to expectations offensively. I do think we'll be better, and if we're not better, we have to find ways to get better.
Well, it was kind of a twofold conversation at the beginning of the season. It was shortstop, and what do you do at shortstop? And then it was providing another bat, either left field or designated hitter. Now, the shortstop part, and I sent a tweet out today, the shortstop part, at least in the short run, you got that right. I mean, J.P. Crawford is sixth in baseball in WAR. Trey Turner is 23rd, and Carlos Correa is 32nd. J.P. Crawford is outperforming all the $250, $300 million shortstops that Mariner fans wanted you to get. But that being said, the other side of the equation, the designated hitter side of the equation, that obviously has not gone the way you wanted. So what's the timeline, and how aggressive are you to get that other bat that wasn't acquired at the beginning of the season?
Sure. I don't know what the timeline is. It's not like we can just decide to go to the store. We're out of bread. Let's go get some more bread.
When does it usually ramp up? Let's put it that way. But year by year, you've been here long enough.
Sometime in the next couple weeks, teams will start making calls to other teams. Right. We're 2 months in now. What are you looking to do? What are you looking to do? Do we match up in any way? Obviously, once you get the calendar to July 1st, it does start to click in where to sort of the buyers identify themselves as buyers, the sellers start to identify themselves as sellers. So that's the time of year. the DH thing obviously has been a disappointment. We've just gotten awful production out of that spot, and it really hasn't mattered who we've put in that spot. It hasn't been like we've had a set designated hitter, and that one player has struggled. It's almost like whoever Scott puts in that spot in a given night, we've just struggled to come up with production. Obviously, it's unacceptable, the level of production we've gotten. We're going to have to find a way to either get more production out of the group and continue to rotate through, or find another bat to go through and just sort of play with a standard nine and roll with one person. And if we do find that person that is a legit bat, I think we'll be pretty aggressive about trying to acquire it.
Well, let's get a little bit more granular there, because I want to hit you on philosophy there, because look, everybody wants a Yordan Alvarez, right? I mean, heck, we got the award for the DH of the year from our own organization in the Martinez Award, right? So where are you? A lot of people question, okay, this kind of rotating DH, that was the plan, what have you, from a offensive production, it just hasn't been there. Have you then had substantive thoughts like, hey, maybe philosophically that's the wrong direction and we got to go get out, if not an aircraft carrier, at least a battleship type of guy? Like have you rethought the philosophy of the position?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I would say my personal philosophy is I'm not married to any one thing. We want to try and build the best 26-man roster we can. And if we have a chance to go get an aircraft carrier and he happens to be a DH, I'm way good with that. If Edgar wants to come out of retirement and hit like Edgar, we'll play in the DH every day. No problem.
Okay.
And if we don't have the ability to do that, we do believe in the idea of rotating people through, trying to match up, give players rest to hopefully avoid running someone into the ground and forcing them to play the field every day. But what we've seen this year has not worked. Like, I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat it and say that, you know, we're getting exactly what we hoped. We're not getting what we've hoped because we've gotten almost no production from whoever's name we've written in that spot on a given night. So if we have a chance to run into another bat, whether that person is a stationary DH or just as someone who can help rotate through the spots, I think we'll be aggressive in doing that.
Hitting in this park. I mean, I'm not the analytics guru that you are, but I can read a spreadsheet, and you look at the park factors. T-Mobile is the toughest place in baseball to hit doubles and triples this year. It's the second hardest to hit singles, but it's the 15th easiest to hit home runs. Last year, worst in singles, worst in doubles, worst in triples, but middle of the pack in home runs. So I got me thinking, well, wait a second. Everybody's been yelling that we should get it, you know, singles and doubles hitters in this park because home runs don't fly out. Well, the park factors indicate home runs do fly out. So do you just go get a bunch of sluggers that swing for the fences for this park? How do you build towards this park?
I mean, I do think that's been part of our problem this year if you look at it. I think for the first part of the season, whether it's the first 3 weeks or a month, we did not get on base enough via walk. We were not taking our walks, and we weren't hitting enough homers. The walks have sort of corrected. We've gotten on base plenty despite hitting for a low average. Our strikeouts have come down a little bit. We're still probably striking out too much. We have not hit homers at a rate that is going to make us a good offensive team, even with the walks right now. Well, our team is built on, you know, a lot of hitters who do damage and take their walks, and the damage has not been there thus far. If I had my druthers, obviously you'd have all perfect hitters, all guys who hit for average, take their walks, get on base, and hit for power. Those are hard to find. Ultimately, if I'm making a sacrifice, I'd rather give up the singles, keep the walks, and take the homers.
Okay.
We just need to do more of that. We do need to hit more homers.
Our last few minutes with Justin Hollander, the general manager of the Mariners. And Justin, I've really enjoyed our conversation. Your candor has been awesome and refreshing and what have you. But I'm just a baseball fan asking you fan questions. Rather than me try and come up with another fan question, I want to ask you, What's kind of top of mind for you? What's moving your needle in a positive way? What's something that you want to say? Or maybe I'm also going to hit you on maybe something that's kind of got you a little bit irked. You're getting up close and personal, obviously, with your baseball team. What is on your mind?
Well, we just covered the offense for about 8 minutes.
Yeah.
So, like, my frustration night to night has been high. I know it was well-documented earlier this week. I think our position players' frustration with the inconsistencies in our offense has been high, and I do feel like they're turning a dial. They've reached a point where they've decided that we just need to be better. So that's been frustrating for everyone. In terms of things that are exciting to me right now, obviously the way we've pitched has been ungodly good. I don't know if I could describe it with enough praise from top to bottom, 1 to 13. The guys who have started the season with us, who we had high expectations for, the guys who have come from the minor leagues, whether it's Bryce Miller in the rotation or it's guys like Gabe Spire and Justin Topa, from top to bottom, they have been unfreaking believable so far this year. I can't heap enough praise upon them. And that's eyeball test. That's whatever metric you want to put on them. Our pitching has been phenomenal. And then, you know, from a, like a higher, like a 10,000-foot view, I'm really excited about a lot of the things we're seeing in the minor leagues with our prospects, particularly our position player prospects at the two A-ball teams in Modesto and Everett. We're seeing a lot of good things from the Harry Ford, Tyler Locklear, Cole Young, Gabby Gonzalez group of players. Those guys have raked basically since day one of the minor league season. You know, ultimately, I think the best team we're ever going to build is going to come mostly from within. And those guys are going to be the next group of position players that come up and hopefully are impact players for the Mariners. And following them night to night has been fun for our whole group.
Which is refreshing because usually it's been the pitching prospects that have come out of the minor league. So it's great that you've got some offensive. I do want to end with the pitching prospects, though. Yeah. I mean, Bryce Miller has been, I mean, he's been historic good thus far in his first few starts. Tell me about Emerson Hancock and Brian Wu and where they kind of were on your hierarchy before Bryce Miller ever set foot in a major league uniform. Like, were they all about the same? Or, I mean, are we going to see two more guys like Bryce Miller when you bring Wu and Hancock up?
That's high expectations to come to the big leagues and do that. In terms of where they were on the hierarchy, Bryce probably a little further along. He's just pitched more. You know, Emerson's had a fair share of injuries early in his minor league career. He seems to be completely by those now. I think it's very realistic that he could pitch in the big leagues this year. His stuff is as good or better than it's ever been. He's performing very well. He's missing a ton of bats in Double A. Really excited about this version of Emerson Hancock that we're seeing. And Brian Wu, again, I don't think there's anything but just bulk innings between him and the big leagues. His stuff is awesome. He's a great athlete. It's the most beautiful delivery you ever want to see. He just has not pitched much. He had injuries in college. You know, he missed his first year recovering from Tommy John that he had in his junior year of college. So just getting him more mound time at the upper levels is probably important. But for all intents and purposes, both guys, if we had an injury or a need tomorrow, we would be able to punch their ticket, bring them to the big leagues, and feel good that they can compete at this level. And it's really a credit to our scouting department, to our player development group, to Scott Hunter and our cross-check group in the scouting world, to our analytics department who works with them in identifying pitchers who have traits that we really believe in, and then to our player development group, specifically Max Wiener and Matt Pierpont, our minor league pitching coordinators. What they've been able to do, from Logan Gilbert to George Kirby to Bryce Miller to the next two guys that we have on the horizon, and Emerson and Brian, along with the volume of relievers we've brought to the big leagues, I can't heap enough praise upon them. They make Jerry, myself, Scott, the people who tend to get on radio shows, they make us look very smart, and we don't have much to do with it, to be honest.
Well, like you said, your candor's awesome. It always is when you join us. We really appreciate it. And let's get the third of three here in this four-game set tonight.
Would love to get on a little roll here.
Sounds good.